The movie Ant-Man, starring Paul Rudd, recently wrapped filming here in Atlanta. That's expected in theaters this summer. Comic book fans are also anticipating the May release of The Avengers: Age of Ultron. And while the comics industry continues to bring in hundreds of millions of dollars at the box office, some artists have taken this wave of popularity to explore some of its origins. For example, this past October, Synchronicity Theater here in Atlanta staged a production of Lasso of Truth, which is based on the life of the creator of the comic book character Wonder Woman. And now, Kennesaw State University's theater department is bringing a new work to the stage. It's called Bloody Pulp, and it examines the rise and the collapse of comic books in the 1950s. Pulp, as the play's main character Jacob explains.
Pulp. A shapeless mass of material. Popular or sensational writing that is generally regarded as being
of poor quality. But in Bloody Pulp, as with these cheaply printed comic books, there's a lot more to it than that. This is Jim Davis. He's the co-director of the show.
At the time, in the late 40s or so, all kids read comic books.
Statistically, almost 90% of kids did anyway, and this is where Bloody Pulp makes its scene.
Guys like me invented comic books. Children of Jewish immigrants who made ourselves over in America.
Though he's not a real person, he's the kind of person that would have been there.
This is Charles Parrott. He's the playwright and co-director, and the real person that Jacob is loosely based on is one of the greats.
Jack Kirby is recognized by folks who know about comics as really the greatest comic artist of all time. He's called the King.
So, when you say comic books, in this day and age, the first thing I think of is like X-Men,
sure. Mm-hmm.
Batman,
mm-hmm.
Superman.
Sure.
When you're talking about comic books in the end of the 40s and the 50s, mm-hmm. What is it we're talking about here?
This is a time when our idea of the superheroes it created in the late 30s, Batman, Superman, Captain America in the early 40s, their popularity has really dropped off post-World War II. And the things that are popular are horror comics and mystery comics and romance comics, things like that. If you're familiar with the old Tales of the Crypt TV
yeah.
show, that is a direct descendant of these comics, the EC horror comics. And they found that the more gore they had or the more sex and the more gorillas they had on the cover, they found that detectives who were involved in gunfights that had a bloody end sold a lot of books. Well, we're going to write 5 of those stories this month. The next month, we're going to do 10 of them.
All of this violence and sex in the comics pages didn't sit well with everyone. And according to Charles, in the early to mid-1950s,
Americans all over the country became convinced that comic books were causing juvenile delinquency and were a blight on American culture.
Isn't it reasonable to expect that your son or your daughter ought to be able to walk down the street, stop at a candy shop, or pass by a newsstand without being subjected to the worst parts of humanity?
We're making this sound like it is a very, very high-minded, esoteric piece of art, which it is on one hand, but also it is goofy and silly and stupid in the best way possible.
Yeah. Now, in the middle of this story of the battle between morals and artistic freedom, comedic relief comes in the form of a gang of young children.
Sorry, these are the newsboys. They're a theatrical device.
Hey, you're a theatrical.
So while all of this main narrative is unfolding, mm-hmm. there's another one taking place. It's a sort of commentary from this sort of Greek chorus.
Sure, yes. Yep.
In the form of these young comic book reading children. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me about the show's newsies?
Yeah, when I conceptualized the Newsboys originally, I told Jim as a collaborator, said I had this idea for these characters who are a group of newsboys, sort of like the Little Rascals, or there was a Jack Kirby mm-hmm. comic called the Newsboy Legion. And I said, you know, they're going to talk about the arguments, the philosophical arguments about the action that's happening. And Jim says, oh, you mean like a Greek chorus? And I was like, yes.
Exactly. Like that.
And I thought I invented this really interesting way of doing it. And he's like, actually, it's the oldest thing ever.
You're only off by 2,500 years, but you were very close.
But yeah, definitely the Newsboys are like the Little Rascals or mm-hmm. our gang or
The kids in the Sandlot,
yeah. The Goonies. Mm-hmm. They are those kinds of kids from like 1950. They play stickball and they have these kind of exaggerated, cartoony New York accents.
Yeah, they're very, very, very much archetypes.
And they do all these very funny things, but in the meantime, they have these complicated philosophical conversations.
Hey, you guys think we're doing something? Can join your band?
Are you going to yak all day, or are we going to play?
Hey, what's she going on about now?
Well, who are we about comics? Ever since our mom said they turned me into alcohol.
All I'm saying is...
It seems certain that reading can make a difference in a person.
And so, yeah, the Newsboys are this fun delivery system for thinking about philosophy. They also are really – a lot of the other characters are more morally ambiguous, and the Newsboys are far less morally ambiguous. Mm-hmm. They are, you know, wiseacres, and they are slugging each other in the arm, and they are being kind of wise guys, but they are undeniably, like, adorable and sweet, and by the end you really, I think, really love them.
And very so, curious, too. The entire kind of arc of the show, they are very curious. Every scene they are in, they are trying to figure something out.
And that something at the heart of Bloody Pulp is a debate that we have seen occur again and again with violent and sexually graphic movies, television, video games, heavy metal, gangster rap. Does art influence behavior? In real life, as in the play, this debate led to Senate hearings.
What is your role as an artist?
I try to communicate an idea.
We're trying to say something meaningful about the human condition.
Then how is it that you do not have any influence on your readers? If you are communicating ideas with all your talents, how do you not shed readers' sense of right and wrong, good and evil? If either you are a bad artist and nobody understands you, or you are a good artist and influence your audience.
They were trying to put public pressure on the comic book industry to regulate itself, which they eventually did, just mm-hmm. in the same way that the film industry did, where they said, well, before you can make rules for us, we'll make them for ourselves. And they did.
Next time you pick up a comic book, check out the cover. You'll probably find a seal printed there, which reads, approved by the Comics Code Authority.
When the Comics Code Authority came in and the seal was put on these comics, it was this stamp essentially on every comic that was sold. It was a seal that said this is an approved comic that met these certain standards.
Crime shall not be presented in such a way as to create sympathy for the criminal, to promote distrust of the forces of law and justice, or to inspire others with the desire to imitate criminals.
Profanity, obscenity, slut, vulgarity, or words or symbols which have acquired undesirable meanings are forbidden.
So, I mean, not to turn this into, like, the old debate, mm-hmm. but, I mean, were the crusaders for a more moral America? I mean, were they right in a way? Like,
I'll tell you, I started this whole project with the sense that we would basically be lampooning that voice, and we would be basically just making fun of those who thought that comics were too violent and sexualized. And then I did the research, and I found out that they really were. And I can't think any parent would say that there isn't some point where they would say, no, I don't want my children to be exposed to that. Mm-hmm. And we as a culture and a society say there are certain lines we won't cross. Those lines change over time and are different in different historical contexts. But it's not necessarily wrong to think that children shouldn't be exposed to very violent content without some context or without their parents understanding what they were reading.
The practical upshot of the Comics Code Authority, however, was that circulation plummeted for the once thriving industry of horror, crime, and romance comics, and those genres basically died. What took their place is pretty much what we know now as the comics, superheroes.
Eventually, we agreed to regulate ourselves, but the truth is, we lost. It was the end of an era.
Comics are doing fine, the industry is strong. What do we learn by looking back at its origins?
There is a line in the show at the very end that talks about how the comic books of the past, the comic books that we are talking about in this, not the superhero books, but the horror and the romance and the crime comics, all of which did spawn the revival of superheroes. Superheroes obviously made a pretty strong comeback in the late 50s and then the early 60s when Marvel Comics kind of does its thing and Spider-Man appears in the Avengers. But this line in the show is that everything we know in popular culture, the big superhero movies, the blockbuster movies, science fiction, video games, kids' cartoons, you can draw a very straight line between those and the conventions that were established in the comic books that we're talking about in this play.
I think another way to think of it, too, is that both science fiction and superhero films, one of the reasons why they're so successful is that they are very allegorical. They allow you to talk about a particular kind of topic within the context of something fantastic that creates a buffer where it seems less real. It allows us to talk about issues about art and representation in a safe distance historically. Mm-hmm. Putting it at that point in history allows us to talk about these issues that are still emergent today. When you think of the tragedy in France at Charlie Hebdo and how that represents the material consequences of people being offended by comic art and art in general, that is very raw and real and very still tender. And so to be able to have those conversations at a safe historical distance allows them to happen in a way that is thoughtful without it being too raw to still deal with.
Pulp, Crisis in the American Comic Book, opens at Kennesaw State University's Onyx Theater February 3rd and runs through February 8th. For WABE, I'm Mike Johns.